Recordings.
So what's it going to
see? I realize I have one and shit.
Okay.
Turn it off and it's not the right thing. Start with that. How far back are people going over there? Okay, we're going to try with that.
We have two rows so far.
Okay. Oh, wow. This is like, it's like advanced.
Okay. First of all, posting Chodach Sanya, I want to thank Rabbi Shnor for inviting me to speak to the Yeshivas Bein HaSemestrim, June's man. In my day, there was also a June. We tried to make it into a Zman, but I don't know if there are as many people as there are today. I don't know. Where are the Smicha guys? It's always the question. It's an old question. It's as old as the hills. So thank you all for coming. I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll be able to share something that we'll all learn something from. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, very famous Gemara, everybody knows. Pasuk says, "Vayisiatzu b'sach b'sahar." The Klal Yisrael stood underneath the mountain of Har Sinai. Says the Gemara, "Malamed." We learn from here, "Shakafa aleim haKadosh Baruch Hu sahar kegigis." HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the mountain, suspended the mountain over Klal Yisrael like a barrel, and then he told them the following famous phrase: "Omar lahem, ima tem mekablim haTorah mutov." If you accept the Torah, all is well. V'im lav, and if not, shom tehei kfuraskan. This will be your grave. I'd like to ask a number of very simple questions on this very famous Gemara that everybody knows from kindergarten. The first question is, if we're going to use a term for lifting over something, suspending, the most common term for that would be something like gova. Like when a person does Hagbah of the Torah, or you do a Kinyan Hagbah, the term the Gemara uses is Shakafa. Shakafa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zahar Kegigis. What does that mean? Shakafa does not mean to lift. What exactly is this verb, Shakafa? It doesn't seem to be the best verb to use if the picture that we have in our mind is that Har Sinai is suspended above Klal Yisrael. Question number two. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael, if you accept the Torah, mutov, all is well. Well, I don't quite understand that. Is really all well? For the rest of history, Klal Yisrael is going to have a mountain suspended above their head. Notice the Gemara doesn't say that the mountain will be taken away. It just says, mutov, it's all good. What do you mean it's all good? With a mountain on top of your head, I don't understand what's so good about that. And thirdly, shom tehei kfuraskan. This will be your burial place? What's the point? The way we usually understand the Gemara, if we don't accept the Torah, the mountain comes down, splat. The point is that we're dead. The Gemara should say, Shom Tehei Misaschem. This will be your death. Not this will be your burial place. Is this being sanitized for the children? We don't want to say that we're dead, you know? So this will be your burial place. Why does the Gemara specifically use that term, Shom Tehei Kfuraschem? The key to answering these questions is another question that's asked by the Marsha in the back of the Gemara. Marsha gets into a little bit of a sticky point with the drasha that Chazal make from the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vayisiatzu b'sachti zohar, that Klal Yisrael stood under the mountain. That's what we learn from the Pasuk. Klal Yisrael stood under the mountain. That's not what the Gemara said. The Gemara says, Hashem suspended the mountain above them. Okay, that's what it's seen in the Pasuk. Kegigis. Like a barrel. Ask the Marsha, where do you see in the Pasuk that there's a gigas involved? All you see is that the mountain was suspended above their head. Where do you see within that Pasuk anything about a gigas, about a barrel? And what in the world is this idea of it being over your head like a barrel? What does that symbolize? What does that mean? It's over your head like a barrel. Are barrels typically over people's heads? My Talmidim in the high school pointed out there used to be a video game called Donkey Kong, so there were barrels suspended over people's heads. Okay, but I don't think that's what the Gemara was necessarily referring to. Says the Marsha, "Midloksiv tachas hahar." Since it doesn't say in the pasuk that Klal Yisrael were tachas hahar under the mountain, rather uksiv b'sachtis hahar in the bottom of the mountain. Mashma b'soch hatachtis, says the Marsha. It's mashma inside the bottom of the mountain. Kegigis shemukefes gam mitzdodim. Like a barrel which surrounds something even from the sides. The pasuk doesn't say Klal Yisrael were under the mountain at all. The Gemara says they were inside the bottom of the mountain, like a barrel, because the mountain was hollow, like a barrel. And therefore, the mountain was not suspended above their heads. The mountain was on the ground, as were Klal Yisrael. But that mountain surrounded them because the mountain was hollow. They were inside the bottom of the mountain. They were under it, yes, but they were inside it simultaneously. I believe that's what the Gemara means when it says, Kofa aleim es hahar kegigis. Kofa means to be covered, like a kippah. Imagine Klal Yisrael being underneath that kippah. Shekofa aleim es hahar kegigis. Klal Yisrael were inside that. They were underneath that when Hashem said, what do you want this to be? Do you want this to be your grave? Says the Marsha, a grave is also hollow. The mountain isn't going to move. It's on the ground already, according to the Marsha. It's not falling on you splat. No. Shom tehe kvuraschem. I'm not going to do anything. It's just going to be your kever. Hashem doesn't have to do anything else. The problem is, what did Hashem mean when he said to them, if you accept the Torah, mutav, it's all good, still not so good. You're kind of surrounded by a mountain. What's so good about that? So I'd like to suggest that when one is underneath the mountain, when one is completely surrounded by the mountain, he's completely cut off from the outside world. There's no distractions. You can't see anything else. One's focus can be placed fully and completely on Kabbalah HaTorah. The Sefer Haksava HaKabbalah asks a question on the pasuk Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar. Klal Yisrael were camped right in front of the mountain. Right in front of the mountain, with the mountain just in front of their faces. Asks Haksava HaKabbalah. That's a very silly thing to do, militarily. You can't see anything around you. An enemy can come over the mountain, around the mountain. Why in the world would Klal Yisrael stand in such a way with the mountain directly in front of them? There's got to be a good reason. Answers Aksava Kabbalah, because when the mountain is right in front of you, you can't see anything else. And for Kabbalah's HaTorah, in order to make sure that you can receive it properly, it's got to be without distractions. It's like when we daven, it's preferable. You can't do it in a Beis Medrash, but it's preferable to daven by a wall. Unless you have a window, you can see Shemayim, but it's preferable to daven by a wall. No distractions. Can't see anything else. The reason why married people wear talesim, wear it over their heads. No distractions. You can't see anything else around you. So Kal Vachomer, when you're accepting the divine word by Kabbalah HaTorah, if you're inside the bottom of the mountain, completely 360 degrees surrounded, you can't see anything else. You're not distracted by anything else. That's mutav. That's good. That's great. That's the best way to be mekabel the Torah. In such an environment, you could fully absorb the learning, you could fully have the kihem chayenu, or Shom tehe kfuraschem. If you're mekabel Torah, that's the best way to do it, mutav. If not, it'll be your kever. It doesn't say he'll die. My Rebbe used to say over in the name of his grandfather, of Chaim Soloveitchik, used to say that Gan Eden and Gehenna are the same thing. A shtender and a bava kama. If you enjoy learning in this world, you get up to Shemayim, they hand you your shtender and you open Bava Kama. This is beautiful. La'olam vo'ed. I get to learn without any distractions. Bava Kama. But if in this world learning was a chore, you get up to Olam Haba, they hand you your shtender, they hand you your Gemara, and oichen vei. That's Gehenna. What am I going to do for the rest of the time? This is not something I enjoy. So I believe this is what Chazal means based on this Marsha. Kofalim harkegigis, the picture that all the kindergarten teachers, all the picture books, they're all wrong. I don't even know where this pshat comes from, the mountain above them. I couldn't find it in any of the mafarshim. If you know where it is, please let me know. Rashi says tachas ahor mamish, but that doesn't fit into the words of the Gemara, and that could also be interpreted like the Marsha said, tachas ahor mamish. You're underneath it, but you're completely surrounded by it. I guess maybe it's hard to draw a picture of that from the outside. Where's Klal Yisrael? So you have to draw the picture from the inside, okay? With the mountains surrounding them, without distractions. That's the idea. Learning Torah requires having no distractions. Another very famous part on this Gemara, which I'd like to make a little more famous, because I just saw it recently. And having heard of the person who said this vart was Kishmo Kainhu. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Brooklyn, where I live, for a long time. His name was Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, Zichron Levracha. Shmuel Birnbaum was one of the Altamirers, went through Shanghai, a person who was known to be a tremendous, tremendous masmid, to the extent that afternoon seder in his yeshiva ended at 8 o'clock. He would not go to chasanas. So most chasanas start like 6:30, 7:30. He would not leave the Beis Medrash till 8 o'clock. For his own grandchildren's chasanas, he wouldn't leave. They had to schedule them for later if they wanted him to be Masada Kedushin or even to be there. He wouldn't leave till 8 o'clock. A tremendous, tremendous hasmada and a firebrand. You could look, you can Google. There's a video of Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, quote, talking in learning with Rav Leib Bach, Zichron Levracha, the Rosh Yeshiva in Detroit at a chasana. Going at each other, like it looks like they kill each other. That was the way Shmuel learns. He always would go over to people, who Halpin, where are you holding and learning? They tell him he's holding, he'd start fighting them, ask questions and fighting. So this vart is Kishmo Kainhu. We all know the Gemara says, Kofalein Har Kigigis. Hashem had to force Klal Yisrael to accept the Torah. Frek Tosfos, everybody knows. Frek Tosfos, we already said Nasa Venishman. Why do you have to force Klal Yisrael to do what they already accepted willingly? People know the famous answers. Tosfos gives an answer. Tosfos says, Shema Yiu Chozrim Kesheyiru Ha'esh HaGadola. Maybe when they saw the fire at Har Sinai, the Kol Suvrakim, it was scary. Yotzen Ishmosan, Chazal say. They practically died. They were scared. They backed out. And now, Kofalein HaKigigis, they said, no way, you're keeping the Torah, I'm not letting you back out. Asked Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, I don't understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what the effect would be of having the Esh, of having the Kolos of Raka. He knew the people would get scared and they would back out. He knew that. Didn't he know that? Of course, Hashem knew that. And because they backed out, Hashem had to force them. And then for 1,000 years, Modor Rambala Raisa, they had a big taina. Anytime they do an Aveira, they say, Hashem, an Aveira, but you forced me into this. For 1,000 years, till Kimu Mashakiblu Kvar in the time of Purim, as we all know. So I asked Shmuel Birnbaum, then why did Hashem do it this way? With the Eish, with the Kolos of Rakim, why? And he answered, it must be just like a bicycle has two wheels. If it only has one, it could be used, it's a unicycle. But it's not a bicycle. You have hydrogen and oxygen that can make water. You take out the hydrogen, you still have oxygen. It can be used, but it's not water. If you have Torah without the Eish, it's not Torah. The Eish is part and parcel of what is Kabbalah HaTorah, what is the Torah. If you don't have the fighting, if you don't have the screaming and yelling, you don't have the atmosphere of a Beis Medrash that's alive, of a Kabbalah HaTorah with the Kol Suvrakim, then it's not Torah. It's a nice book. It reads well. There's some laws there, some morals, some ethics, some history. But it's not Torah. Torah requires that Eish. Using the terminology that my Rebbe, Zichron Levracha, would have said, he always used to talk about there are two elements to Torah. There's the voice of Torah, and there's the fire of Torah. The voice of Torah are the words of the Torah itself, but there also has to be that fire of Torah. That's the atmosphere. That's the passion. They're both needed. Otherwise, you don't have Torah. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say it differently. He used to say, there's the words of the Torah, there's the klach of the Torah. There's those things that can't be written, all the emotional things. It's all part and parcel of the Torah. Without both, you don't have Torah. I remember when I was in my Rebbe Shir, and he used to talk about the voice of Torah and the fire of Torah. There was one person who said, you know, there sometimes seems to be, some shirim are very difficult. There's also the onon kaved ma'od. Sometimes the shir is a little cloudy. We don't always understand the shir. It's a third element. But these two elements have to be there. There has to be the voice of Sinai. There has to be the fire of Sinai. Need both. That's the second point. First point is the learning has to be in a Beis Medrash without distractions. The second point is the learning has to be exciting. It has to be with the Eish. In Parshas Bamidbar, the Torah tells us that by Yisyaldu al-Mishpachosom, Klal Yisrael was being counted, they were counted by Shevet. And says Rashi, they had to produce a Shtar Yichus. They had to produce a document to show which Shevet they were part of. They had to show who were their forefathers, generations back. The Medrash asks, Goyim came to Hashem and said, how come you didn't give us the Torah? And Hashem said, well, you never gave me your Shtar Yichus. Klal Yisrael did. And the question is, why does that difference make a difference? Just because you have a Shtar Yichus, therefore you get the Torah? If you don't have a Shtar Yichus, you don't get the Torah? What does one thing have to do with the other? Perhaps the answer is, there are two aspects to the transmission of Torah. There's Matan Torah, the giving of Torah, and there's Kabbalas HaTorah, the receiving of the Torah. There's a giver, and there's a receiver in every transmission. To transmit the Torah midor l'dor, it's not enough that the giver, that the Rabbein, want to give over the Torah. It's not enough that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give over the Torah. The Mekabel has to want to get the Torah too. And the only way that the Mekabel can decide that they want to get the Torah is if they have respect for the Nosein HaTorah, for the Rabbeim who are giving over the Torah. It's only if you have a Shtar Yichus that says that I'm Machshev my ancestors, then Klal Yisrael deserves to get that Torah because they're Machshev those previous Doros. On the other hand, the Goyim didn't have the Shtar Yichus. They were not Machshev the Nosein. Therefore, they could not be appropriate Mekablim. There's a famous Maisa about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, which everybody says over, wrong. I'll tell you the right version, because I heard it from a source. I was sitting at a Bonei Olam dinner next to Rav Pinchas Kahn, who's the Rosh Kol in Chaim Berlin. He noticed, it's a little bit related to my wife, so he noticed I was preparing for shiur, came over to me, he wanted to help me out. That was very helpful. He practically gave me a whole shiur for the next day. That's what these people can do on the spot, whatever sugya you were learning. And Rav Avram Kamenetsky, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's youngest son, who was a businessman, came and sat next to us because of Rav Pinchas Kahn. And he decided to tell us a famous story about his father that you'll see, everybody knows, but he told me one point, told us one point, that most people have wrong. Because the way the story was published was wrong. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was on an airplane on his way to Eretz Yisrael with a grandson who was attending him. And sitting next to him in the plane was a professor, I believe it was in Hebrew University, it may have been Bar-Ilan University, but it was one of the universities in Eretz Yisrael. And this grandson was taking such good care of Yaakov. He brought him food, he brought him a basin with the washing cups he could wash, he took off his shoes and put on his slippers. He really took care of him very well. And this professor couldn't believe it, he couldn't understand. And he asked Yaakov, my grandchildren don't treat me like that. Why do your grandchildren treat you so well? Yaakov famously said, well, my grandchildren understand that I'm two steps closer to Sinai, to Hashem's revelation of the Torah to Klal Yisrael. And your grandchildren understand that you're two steps closer to the apes. So why should they be machshev you? Well, my grandchildren are machshev me. The only thing that's wrong with the story, said Rav Avram Kamenetsky, the story was published by the professor. He was so impressed by this. And it became well known as Rav Yaakov and the grandson on the airplane, but it wasn't a grandson. Rav Avram Kamenetsky was the youngest son. He looked a lot younger and he was clean shaven and said he was a businessman. And therefore it looked like he was a grandson. That's what the professor thought. Rav Avram said, it was really me. It was really me. And they all say it was a grandson, but it was really me. I'm the son. The point is, when you're machshiv the nosein, then it's possible to be a mekabel. And you know something? It doesn't always happen. It doesn't always happen. Parshas Baloscha. This week's parsha, we have a famous Rashi. Rashi says that Baloscha es haneros, the term aliyah, is used al shem shehalav ola, because the flame arises. Kosov b'hadlakos and loshen aliyah. The Torah uses, in the term of lighting, a language of aliyah, going up. Why? Shetzorich lahadlik, because the Kohen has to know to light the candles, ad shetehe shalheves ola me'aleho, till the candles go up by themselves. Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik used to use that Rashi as a moshel relating to the relationship between a Talmud and a Rebbe. The Rebbe is supposed to light the candle of the Talmud until the Talmud can stand independently on their own. Talmud shouldn't have to depend on the Rebbe forever. I had a problem with this Rashi. I don't understand. When you're told there's a mitzvah to light the menorah, if you're supposed to light it and it's not ad she'olam me'aleo, that means it's not lit. Of course, when you light it, it has to be. You have to hold the candle to it until it's lit by itself. What, the kohen's supposed to stand there with six arms the whole night for 14 hours, keeping them alight? Or he's supposed to just touch it and it doesn't get lit and he just walks home? It's pashut. Of course, you have to light it until it lights by itself. Even when you light the Chanukah menorah, you try to light it till it lights by itself. It doesn't always work. But you have to try to light it till it lights by itself. What else is the point of lighting something? So what does this mean, until it goes up by itself, you have to light it? Of course, it's partial. What's the point of it? And I'd like to explain that based on another famous Rashi, which is also very difficult in this week's Parsha, where it says that Aaron did what he was told in lighting the menorah. Vayas kein Aaron, says Rashi, Lahagid shvacha shel Aaron, the Pasuk says that Aaron did what he was told to do, to teach us, to praise Aaron, Shaloshina, that he did not change from the exact way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to light the menorah. Says the Sifsa HaChomim, V'chitala al daito, would you ever think Shalo Osam HaShetziva Hashem Ede Moshe, that Aaron would not do what he was told through Moshe to do from Hashem? Of course he would do it. Says the Sifsa HaChomim, of course we would know that he would do the command of Hashem, Mikol Mokom, nevertheless, Dovor Godol Huzeh, this is a great thing, that he followed instructions. Shehaposuk Meir Al Tzidkos. The Posuk testifies, he's a tzaddik. One second. So how did that answer the question? This is supposed to praise Aaron. The question was, of course he's going to do it. The answer is, well, yes, of course he would do it, but he's a tzaddik for doing it. It's a dover gadol. What kind of dover gadol is it? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to do something, wouldn't you do it exactly the way that Hashem said to do it? Where's the dover gadol? Where's the tzidkus in this? And especially since we all know, why was he given the mitzvah of lighting the menorah? Because he complained, as Rashi says, Loma nisvacha parshas hamenorah leparshas hanasiim. What's the connection to last week's parsha? Levich sharah Aaron chanukas hanasiim. When Aaron saw that the nasiim were all bringing things by the opening days of the Mishkan, chol sh'oz daito, he felt bad. Lo hayimayim b'chanukah. He wasn't part of that dedication. Lohu v'lo shivto. You're going to get the mitzvah nairs. Now, after you complain for something and then Hashem gives it to you, you're going to change from what he said to do? I know from children, if I was to buy a bicycle for one of my children, and the other one complains, I also want a bicycle, and then I give that child the bicycle, so that child then goes through the mud, brings the bicycle into the house, to the brand new white living room carpet, and does a figure eight on the carpet. After you begged for the bicycle, you're then going to bring it in and do what's completely wrong in the house with that bicycle? Would Aaron HaKohen, it's bad enough, we wonder, it's such a big thing, such tzidkus, of course he's going to follow the instructions of Hashem, but especially after he only got this mitzvah, after he complained, it's not fair, they have and I don't have, then Aaron's going to do something different? How can it be? So you have to say that it's extremely difficult for anyone, even Aaron HaKohen, even in circumstances like these, to follow instructions. Why? Every human being is a tselem elokim. What does it mean, tselem elokim? Gracious bara elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. The elokim, besides meaning other things, represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creativity. A tselem elokim, what makes us like Hashem? In what way are we like Hashem? Hashem doesn't have two arms and two legs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creative, and we're creative. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us to be creative beings. Animals are not, malachim are not. Only human beings are creative. That's what it means, Tzelem Elokim. A Tzelem Elokim always wants to be creative, always wants to do its own thing, always wants to be independent, always wants to put its stamp on anything that surrounds them. And we know that Chazal say, Kishem Shepartzufeyim Einan Shavos, Kach Deyoseim Einan Shavos, just like no two people look alike, no two people think alike. Everyone has their own way of doing things. So even in Aaron HaKohen, maybe especially in Aaron HaKohen, a gadol and a tzaddik like Aaron HaKohen has a drive to be a tzelem elokim, to be a creative being, perhaps more than the regular person. Tremendous drive. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, do it exactly like this. He will do exactly like this. But there's a tension. It's difficult. But he's able to overcome. He's able to do it. But it's a Dover Gadol. It shows Tzidkus, that he's able to bend himself from his creativity to fulfill the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's always a resistance in a wick, in the oil. When you try to light it, never lights easy. Never lights easy. There's always a resistance. Hashem has to tell Aaron, try to light it, try to light it, try to light it. It's hard. It's not going to be easy to light it. But keep trying to light it. Ad she'ola me'aleh, until it goes up by itself. It's easier to understand what the Chiddush of this Rashi is within Rav Yosef Ber, within the Rav's Moshel. You have a Talmud and a Rebbe relationship. What's the Rebbe trying to do? He's trying to have a hashpah on the Talmud. That means that he takes himself, his Derech HaLimud, his hashpah for Sachayim, and he's trying to light the flame of the Talmud. Flames look very similar to each other if they have similar wicks and similar fuel. The Rebbe, in a sense, is trying to implant himself into the Talmud. He's trying to make a duplicate of his style in the Talmud. The Talmud resists. That's natural. I'm a creative being. I want to be independent. There's a conflict. So Hashem says through this Moshel to every Rebbe, try the best you can and try hard. It's not going to be easy till the Talmud can be independent, because you don't want the Talmud to be independent and creative that he creates outside the Masorah. There's creativity within the Masorah. What's Pshat in the Rambam? What's Pshat in the Tosfos? Not, I'm going to say another Shita. There are five Rishonim and there's my Pshat. That's too creative. That's outside the Masorah. The Rebbe's teaching the Talmud how to learn, how to work in life, and within there, there's tremendous room for creativity, but there's a resistance as the Rebbe's style starts to overtake the Talmud, and there's a matching flame that comes off of the Rebbe to the Talmud. The Rebbe has to try, even though it's very hard, to light the Talmud until he could be independent within that Masorah. Keep going, Hashem says. But this only works if the Talmud has respect for the Rebbe. It only works if the Talmud is machshiv the yichus. He's machshiv who the Rebbe is. He's machshiv where the Rebbe comes from. Otherwise, it's like the Gemara says about the first pasuk of Megillas Rus. Vayihi b'meishvod ha'shoftim. Says the Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Tesvav that the people of that door judged the judges. They couldn't follow the leaders. They were always judging them. Oh, he's really like this, he's really like that. You just have to listen to the news any day these days and you see how even the presidents, everybody's being judged. So they judged even the Gedolim. They couldn't listen to them because, oh, you're this, you're that, you're that. Oh, you're not my style, you're not this. That's what people do. As opposed to linking into a Masorah that they trust. My brother once told me that he asked his Rosh Hashiva, Rav Hanoch Leibowitz, Zichrono Livracha, what happens if I get up to Shemayim? And they tell me that my whole derech in life is wrong. So his Rebbe said to him, don't worry, stand behind me. Because I'm standing in front of my father, who is a Talmud of the Altar of Slabodka. He's standing behind the Altar of Kelm, who's standing behind Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who's standing behind Rabbi Zundel Salant, who's standing behind Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, who's standing behind the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was like a Rishon. The Rishonim were like Malachim. Nothing's getting past the Vilna Gaon. Just stand behind me. So we have to understand also, our Rabbeim mostly learned by Rabbi Yosher Ber, Soloveitchik, who learned by his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who learned by his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who learned by his father, the Beis Halevi, who learned in Volozhin, ultimately by Rav Chaim Volozhiner, and by the Vilna Gaon. Same thing. Nothing's going to get past the Gaon. We just have to be machshiv that yichus, and therefore link up to it. There's plenty of room to be creative. But within that Masorah, that's what we have to do. Three components. To learn in a Beis Medrash where there's no distractions, to learn with a Bren, with a fire, and to try to be a link in the Masorah by being Machshiv that Masorah. I'll conclude with a Vart that Rabbi Schnall told me, he quoted in my name, and I've quoted in the name of Avel Yeshve, who was the Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva, that many people say, at the end of Shacharis, the Sheish Zechiros, and one of them is Pentishkach Hasadvar Mesharoi Necha. We don't want to forget that which we saw with our own eyes. Yom Hashem Amadetu Lefnei Hashem Lekecha B'Chorev, the day that we stood in front of Hashem on Har Sinai. Ask Rav Elyashvei, I don't understand. You won't forget what you saw? We didn't see it. It's sure, and Neshama was there, I know. But Asharo Heinecha, I didn't see it with my own eyes. So what is this? I have to remember what I saw with my own eyes? So he wanted to suggest, and clearly it's B'derech Rush, he wanted to suggest, every single person in yeshiva has their own personal Kabbalah HaTorah in yeshiva. This is our Har Sinai. This is where we have the exposure to the Rabbeim, to the Rosh Yeshiva, to the Mesorah. This is the place where there's a fire. Not every shul, unfortunately, when you have people learning, has that fire. It's not like in a yeshiva, where people take a svara so seriously. This is my whole life, is this svara. This is my svara, and I'm fighting with my chavrus, and he's fighting back. I have a raya from this Rashi, he has a raya from that Rashi. It's an esh, enclosed in a base medrash, where there's no distractions. Where we have Rashi, Yeshiva Gedol Yisrael, part of the Mesorah, going all the way back, at least to the Vilna Gaon and beyond. As Hashem, if we have this personal Kabbalah HaTorah during our years in yeshiva, with all these components, let's do it right, then Be'ezer Hashem, we too will be able to become part of that Mesorah and be able to transfer that on to the next generation. Thank you very much. Yeah. Have a good Shabbos. Yeah. Thank you for coming to listen.
They also have a yichas.
You have to ask them. I'm sure they have a yichas. You have to ask them. I just don't know.